special committee for House Energy to order at 4 after. And we are missing a couple. We'll go through the roll call at the moment. Co-chair Millett is sick. We do have representatives Nagak and Josephson and Isaacson, myself, and let the record show that Higgins is also excused. He may be able to show up. He's testifying in another meeting. So on my right, I've got Debbie Tillinghast, the House Recording Secretary. Good morning. And also our LIO moderator is Alex Giudice. Excellent. So we've got my committee aide, Dave Tallarico, and Jeff Turner, Charisse's co-chair Millett's committee aide, and Representative Foster is here. Great. So today we are going to be having an overview of the state energy policy. We have a presentation by Sarah Fisher Goad, the executive director of the Alaska Energy Authority. Jean Terrio is also here, the deputy director for statewide energy policy, AEA. And also available in the audience for questions is Stacey Schubert, the director of government affairs for Alaska Housing. And Bob Breen, director of research and development, is on the line, ready to answer any questions. So we've been talking about, in the past, a lot of different energy ideas that people have. And one of the comments that was made in committee was, we have so many different presentations. Who is putting all of this in one cohesive plan? In 2010, there was a bill that passed this body that gave the governor the authority to oversee and put together a policy organization for all of this energy. And we know that energy is in the Department of Natural Resources, it's in the Department of Community and Economic, DCCD, it's in agencies such as Alaska Housing, ADA, and so forth. So with all of this stuff going on, who is manning the shop and having the bird's eye view of everything going on? And that's what we're going to be hearing today, at least in part. And Sarah and I talked some yesterday, and I'm excited for all that she's bringing to the table today. I think it'll help us as we look forward to not only what is being done, what might need to be accelerated, what might need to be helped, but also to be excited about what is going on. So Sarah Fisher Goad, if you'd like to come up and bring whomever and introduce yourself officially on the record, state your affiliations, and then download. This will be exciting. And you're the only one, so you've got until 10 o'clock.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Sarah Fisher Goad, the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. And where's the full screen view? Do you know where that is? Where full screen is? This isn't the PDF. This isn't the.
I should also mention, while we have this break, Chris Rose, the executive director for REAP, is also in the audience today. So thanks for being with us.
I'm not bothered by that in the
slide. Okay, you're okay.
Yes.
Okay. I'll just pull that out of the way. Okay. Sorry, Mr. Chairman. So we've been before the committee before, and I'm actually very happy to come and talk to you about energy policy, or at least where AEA's perspective and AEA's role is in energy policy. I have with me Jean Terrio, our Deputy Director of Statewide Energy Policy Development. And this slide, I just wanted to just start with this. This is just to remind the committee of, you know, Alaska Energy Authority is really about reducing the cost of energy. That is our mission, and we have really four primary areas where we do this: with investing in the energy infrastructure, diversifying the portfolio. We work with energy planning and policy, which is really going to be the focus of our discussion today. And we provide technical and community assistance. One thing that we've added with this presentation is also some information about the Interior Energy Plan, which I know most legislators have heard about. That's actually in legislation that, although did not go through House Energy, I know this committee has been interested in that. So we wanted to make sure that we incorporated that because it's a very good example of us in our coordination role in policy development working with our sister agency, ADA, with developing that legislation and moving forward on Senate Bill 23. So internally, when we talked about what we really wanted to discuss in this presentation, we really wanted to talk about where AEA's role is in really developing projects, because that's really ultimately what I think folks do want to see is how the state of Alaska decides to move forward with respect to projects. And so this really is, I think, a slide. I think we could probably talk for the full 2 hours just with respect to this slide, but it's really how we go from policy to projects. And what we really wanted to demonstrate in here that there's many, many areas and many entities in state government that play a role, and including the administration and the executive branch with the leadership in the governor's office. And again, you know, the Interior Energy Plan is a very good example of working with the governor's office in developing the vision on how the state of Alaska in the most efficient way possible to help a significant portion of the state of Alaska in developing reducing the cost of energy, which is AEA's program, and then also ADA providing the financing mechanism to help make that happen. So, and of course, the legislature, of course, plays a role in that, and we, of course, are working on the policy development. Our board of directors, we just had a presentation to the AEA board of directors with respect to the Interior Energy Plan. We've also done various presentations on project evaluations. Most recently, Nick Shimoniak, our project economist, did a presentation to our board with respect to the economic analysis of HVDC in Alaska, and just kind of a perspective on, it's not really, it wasn't a pros and cons of HVDC, but where would Alaska as a state and a entity that would be developing projects such as AEA, how would we fit into that picture, and how would we best evaluate whether an HVDC project would be something to move forward with? And of course, we also have our programs and our projects that we manage, and we have loans and direct grants through a variety of programs and statutory authority. We provide project management at various levels. We oftentimes will manage projects as essentially the construction of a project in a small community that may not have the resources to do the actual construction themselves. We also do project oversight, of which we have several grantees that are much more sophisticated grantees that have a lot of internal resources, and what we do provide is a management of those projects. And depending on the program, that really kind of determines the level of oversight that we have. And through our programs, we've really made a commitment to the legislature to provide oversight and milestone management. And in particular, I think with the development of the Renewable Energy Fund, it was very much expected that we weren't in the business of providing grants and then not making sure that the grantees or AEA, we wanted to make sure that we carried through with the projects that were proposed, and making sure that the results that we were expecting, or the results that we evaluated, were also the results that we received. And so that is an ongoing aspect of even projects that are under construction. We continue to work with the grantees for them to provide us data and operation information for us to continue to evaluate what works, what may need to be adjusted in particular projects, and how we may adjust our evaluation process going forward. And again, also we have our partnerships where we have ADA as a partner, and then we also have private organizations that we do partner with developing energy projects. So this slide, we provided this this information to the committee in past presentations. It looks nicest on a bigger piece of paper, but this is just an opportunity to see with the public and private sector programs and the residential programs, the various agencies that are involved, from AHSC residential programs and loan programs, AEA's assistance programs, Department of Health and Social Services is also included in this through the LIHEAP program, our emerging technology program. Department of Commerce also has a role to play. They've been provided a statutory program for a commercial loan program. In addition, there's the Aid Assets program, which is the new loan program that was codified last year. And also the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development also now has the bulk fuel and the bridge fuel loan program. So again, this is just a schematic to show you that there's a lot of agencies that are involved with respect to various programs and the development of in-state energy use. So I'm going to turn it over to Gene to talk a bit more about some of the additional work that's been going on since he's come on to AEA as part of our management team.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. One of the things that the AEA has taken on now is making sure that we follow up with the energy policy. And that's not the energy policy that we, the authority, set. It's the energy policy that's been set by policymakers in the state, that being the governor and the legislature. Over the last couple of years, there's been passage of a number of pieces of legislation. House Bill 152, I believe, is the number, which set up the Renewable Energy Fund. House Bill 306 in 2010, which established goals for a number of energy-related goals for the administration to administer. Senate Bill 220 set up some new funding sources to achieve energy policy. And then last year, the legislature passed Senate Bill 25, a specific loan program for our sister authority, ADA, to as they implement their statutes to create economic development in the state of Alaska. Senate Bill 25 specifically set up a pot of money for them to use to underpin the development of energy infrastructure that can help development in the state of Alaska. So as the authority, AEA then monitors how we are moving forward on achieving these goals. Again, the goals that were set by the collaboration between the administration and the legislature. We coordinate between the different agencies. As you mentioned in your opening statement, there's an aspect of energy that resides in DNR. There's an aspect of energy that's in DEC with regard to permitting. There's an aspect of energy in CED. And so we try to make sure that there's enough collaboration between those agencies so that these overall goals are achieved.
At this point also, since we have Chris Rose here representing, as it were, many, many different energy interests throughout the state, do you serve as a clearinghouse for some of these, or how do you interact and bring them under the one umbrella if possible?
We do. There's a lot of collaboration on the administration of the Renewable Energy Fund. We also have an Energy Efficiency Partnership Group that has partner players that come from around the state to interact with us, the agency, the authority, as we move forward on these policies, implementing the policies, monitoring the policies, seeing, putting the metrics out. How are we going to quantify, you know, how we are moving forward and achieving these goals? So it involves a lot of collaboration from around the state.
How do they best communicate with you, or how do they know that you're the person that they need to collaborate with?
Well, I think the way that a lot of these partnerships are set up, there is a contact person at the authority that, you know, sets up those meetings, coordinates those meetings, is sort of the link with the authority for information coming in and out.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may add to that too, I think after when there was a press release out when Gene was hired on to the AEA team, there it was kind of stated that this the the goal here is to have AEA serve as a clearinghouse, to be a point of contact for folks, you know, external and also internal, to help work through the development of these coordination issues. And we actually have a slide prepared that after Gene came on board, there are several issues that actually came up very, very quickly on access to state land and state resources for energy development and other issues through even the development of the Interior Energy Plan, of which AEA served really as the clearinghouse to help develop those aspects of the plan. And I guess, for example, the propane development has been a discussion with respect to when we're talking about trucking LNG from the North Slope. There is the propane byproduct. How would we use that, and what is the goal with that propane, although it's not driving the economics of that project? What is our goal with respect to the propane? And, of course, it is to utilize that propane and help further reduce the cost of energy for folks that would not be eventually hooked up by a pipeline or receiving, you know, a distribution through a distribution system, receiving natural gas directly to the home. And so we've been working on the development of that propane aspect and the expansion of that through rural Alaska. And one way to do that, and Gene leading up that effort, is really within AEA, there's a lot of technical resources available that kind of help that he can draw upon depending on what the issues are. He can draw upon various technical resources at AEA to help kind of develop the issue and then kind of provide a policy recommendation for us to move forward with.
And if I'm jumping ahead, just let me know that it'll be in there. But just bringing up the propane, I mean, this helps to reveal the enormous challenge you have as an individual agency that doesn't have a lot of employees. You're actually contracting with ADA, who have a lot of different tasks on their sheet as well. But as you look at propane use, you're talking about interacting with the Denali Commission, with tribal councils, with village councils, city councils, ANCSA corporations. It just goes on and on and on. How are you able to tackle it with the resources that you have? Are they coming to you? Is the word getting out? How you know, and this is all under coordinating multi-agency efforts. How effective have you been in getting them to come and talk with you, and maybe getting them all in the table in the room at the same time? You know, when you're talking about coordinating multiple efforts or multiple agencies for one effort.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think some of it depends on, you know, the project specific, and I know I keep referring to the Interior Energy Plan, and that was, I think, a very good example of being able to draw upon internal resources of AEA in order to, you know, help develop that. And I think it is more of a project specific. Do we have enough resources to do that? I mean, I think as an agency, what we try to do is make sure that we manage the resources that we have in the most efficient manner. You know, we are very sensitive as a state corporation, wanting to make sure that that we responsibly, you know, manage the resources, that we hire effective folks to do the job that needs to get done. We have a significant number of subject matter experts. We're not three or five people deep, depending on the issue. However, I think, you know, that's something that we have to draw upon our core resources, and then we do either contract with the private sector, or we also, again, coordinate with other agencies for that type of effort. Another example, and there's a slide in here too to also review our Susitna-Watonna efforts. And we work very closely on a couple levels with the Department of Natural Resources to help coordinate some of the information in our interaction with the federal resource agencies, and they also work as a clearinghouse and a coordinating effort with the state resource agencies for the development of the project. So I think there's a variety of ways that we do that, and I don't know if there's a specific one way. You know, here's our roadmap and how we do that. I think we tackle the issues that that we that come to our door and we put the resources toward that that we need. And then also through a budgetary process, you know, working with OMB and the governor's office, we're part of the Executive Budget Act, and we have to then discuss what our annual needs are, like other agencies, with respect to how we need to get the work done that we're mandated to do. So I think overall, I think we've been very successful with the resources that we have. And again, we're not looking at trying to expand the Alaska Energy Authority to, you know, a 200-member agency. That's just not something that we think that would be appropriate.
Well, and I appreciate the last comment, and let the record know, by the way, that Representative Hughes is here. And my question is in no way to disparage or belittle efforts. In fact, it's really saying you have a Herculean task. Gene just came on essentially this year as the project coordinator, late last year, middle of last year.
I've been on about 7 months.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, one person trying to get the arms around this huge octopus, as far as, you know, I mean, it was revelation to me, maybe to some of the others, not when I asked Commissioner Bell, you know, I said, we spend a half $1 billion in energy projects here the last 2 years, and she said, no, $1.6 billion. That's a lot of different efforts. And so do you have enough resources, basically, to get your job done? Is there something we need to be considering as a legislature to empower that, not so that you can grow as a huge organization, but so that you can help meet the needs of Alaskans throughout the state who desperately need to get affordable energy to their homes and businesses spread out across the expanse, wherever that might be, outside of areas that already have affordable and abundant energy sources?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I think, you know, we're in the middle, of course, of the legislative session at the discussion of the FY14 budget, and the capital budget will be coming out relatively soon. So I think we're actually in pretty good shape with respect to what the governor has provided in the budget for AEA efforts.
Okay.
For FY14. But I think your point is well taken, and I think our goal, since Gene did come on board very late, in some respects late in our development of our fiscal year 14 budgetary process, this is something that we've discussed through the interim to make sure that we, you know, we come back with a comprehensive report in January to the legislature on, okay, we have this new, more coordinated, focused effort on energy policy development. What have we seen come through our door for the last year? How have we addressed it? And then really report back to the legislature. So I think with respect to the resources, that's something that we'll continue to work on in the interim, and then the development of the FY15 effort, and come back to you through the Executive Budget Act and the Governor's budget in December 15th of next year, or this year.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just as the sort of operating as a de facto Department of Energy, almost, the authority, I've been really pleased with the coordination, the cooperation from other departments. If we've got an issue that involves energy, but it also involves DNR lands or the statewide pipeline coordinator's office, by reaching out to DNR, then we get resources committed from that agency. They bring that expertise then to the discussion. And so at this point, whenever I've reached out to another department saying, you know, I need some expertise or I need information, it's been provided. It's pretty clear to me that the directive has gone out from the third floor to the agencies that they want that kind of collaboration between the departments. And so far, it seems to be working really well. So you've got the employees within ADA AEA, but we are able to reach out and put together teams on projects that bring in the expertise, permitting expertise, land access expertise, that type of thing when it's needed.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. Continue, please.
But, Mr. Chairman, I, this is one of my favorite maps to show. We've been updating this for the last couple of years. And the reason I wanted to show this is that this really shows a lot of policies and funding that the legislature has provided to us. And it really shows the, you know, the policy in action. And because I think it's important to make sure that we know that it's not about writing a plan and it's not about developing a policy. It's really about developing projects that make a difference for Alaskans and help reduce the cost of energy. And so on this slide, what we've tried to do is show where the Renewable Energy Fund has had a statewide impact. Our systems upgrades, those are our rural energy infrastructure projects where we've constructed powerhouse and bulk fuel tank farms in rural Alaska, and of course our energy efficiency effort. Now, energy efficiency is a real key part of our energy portfolio. A lot of the projects that are still shown under construction here were funded through stimulus funds, through federal dollars, and so that makeup will change a bit as we move forward with that, but we have established some very good programs and just adopted regulations to really codify our village end-use efficiency program, and we're looking at codifying our other programs to make sure that we have the roadmap, that we show the public this is how we would evaluate it when there's funding available for us to do this. This is how we'll evaluate the projects and how we will fund the projects. So again, I have this in a map size map or a big map in my office because again, I like to make sure that we do focus on the fact that we really are wanting to construct and make sure projects are constructed.
Representative Nagyat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you take occasional site visits to the remote areas of Alaska to keep abreast of what's happening there in real time?
Through the chair, Representative Nagyak, yes, and I do need to do more of that. As executive director, I like to make sure that I am out to see communities. I did have the opportunity to go to Sandpoint and King Cove this past year. I was in Bethel in the winter to meet with the Chininik Wind Group, and have the intention of this summer being able to go out to see the work that's being done in those communities. So yes, I do like to do that. It is something that I wish I had more time to do more of that. But I think it is important for me to get out and to see projects, and to other members of our management team.
Thank you.
So we've already discussed the Renewable Energy Fund, but again, this is something that shows from the policy of 50% renewable by 2025. It shows what we've done and worked towards through the Renewable Energy Fund, and then also the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, of which we have. For the round of applications that we had this last year, we did leverage federal funds through the Denali Commission to provide funding for 16 projects. In fiscal year 14 capital budget, we do have a funding request for $2 million to continue with another round of applications for emerging energy technology. And I think this is a real important aspect of the energy portfolio in the programs that we have to really kind of help advance technology. And the thing that I really like about the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, that although there's a lot of renewable projects that technology is advanced through, this is just not about renewable. There are energy efficiency projects, and fossil fuel projects are also eligible for funding on this. So it's a very broad application process.
Representative Nagia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, how do you go about the vetting process for new technology? Do you get reports, project reports, or site visits, or?
Through the chair, Representative Nagia, with respect to the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, the process that was established, the fund has associated with it an advisory committee, and also the Renewable Energy Fund has an advisory committee also, of which Mr. Rose, who's in the audience, is a member of. The difference with the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, that was a specific advisory committee that was a technical advisory committee. So all of the members of that committee are engineers and have various expertise that helped advise the Alaska Energy Authority with respect to the project. So we went through a two-phase application process of which applications came in. The advisory committee did yeoman's work for folks that are you know, professional engineers who have full-time jobs. They spent a lot of their personal time reviewing applications and helping us you know, vet those projects and whittle them down into a smaller group of applications that then went through a more formal process and a proposal, an oral proposal to our advisory committee and our team members. We had a project manager and then also our deputy director of alternative energy and energy efficiency work through those projects, and they developed a ranking criteria for the EETF projects. So it's since it's emerging technology, there wasn't a need for any type of a site visit for those projects, but sites were in consideration, especially I believe in the hydrokinetic projects that were proposed, and a couple of the other projects had specific sites that were part of the program development.
Thank you.
Hello? Okay. Mr. Chairman, before we move off this slide, I'd like to just touch on some of the policy, I think, around this. The state, as is shown on the slide here, set the goal, the legislature set the goal of 50% renewable and alternatives. And we're encouraging different areas across the state in many rural settings to avail themselves of whatever energy source is available locally. But I think with the passage of the legislation setting that goal, the passage of legislation setting up these funding programs, the Renewable Energy Fund, it was a recognition that for a small utility in a rural setting to undergo the expense of putting up the Met Towers to see if the wind resource is really there that can be captured, that's very expensive. And there's a chance that you might put those towers up, undertake on that expense, and then determine that the resource just really isn't there. It's very risky for that small utility to take on that expense. And I think what the legislature did is they realized that, and they came forward and said, we, the state of Alaska, will share that risk with you because we understand that those first dollars spent many times on an energy project are the riskiest dollars. You're not sure whether there's a resource there really to capture. And so the state stepped forward and said, we will help you with that. We will share that risk out of the state coffers. Also with the emerging technology, there may be a new wind diesel integration technology that can be utilized or some other technological advance. Again, evaluating that, determining whether it has application in a small rural setting, very expensive to do, very risky to do. The state stepped forward basically and said, We'll share that risk with you to see if there is technology that we can implement or put out in the villages that will pay a benefit not only to that village but to the state long term.
Mr. Naga.
When you're doing that evaluation, do you also, in the site, do you also evaluate the, you know, the capabilities of present systems within the community?
Yes. One of the things when the state goes in through a grant or a project, they look at the system, and I know we've had some specific discussion about, there's a wind resource that can be developed and brought into the distribution system, but if the existing distribution system is fallen into any state of disrepair, you know, it isn't going to do you any good to develop the resource if you can't get it to the consumer. So sometimes we have to actually work with the community to make sure that the backbone, the basic backbone of the distribution system is sound before you can actually develop the new resource and bring it into production.
Good. Well, and this goes back, I've got a couple questions on this. Just touching as a follow-up to Representative Nagyak then in your answer, as you're looking at investments that have just been made for an oil infrastructure backbone, and now we're looking at perhaps, especially in the interior, helping to provide a propane base. How do you go about evaluating the funds to help communities? What do they need to be doing to say, okay, you just got, you know, a $10 million storage tank for oil. Now we're going to give you propane. What's the give and take in the community and with you in helping to decide who gets new monies after new monies? You know what I'm saying?
Well, and Mr. Chairman, actually, we are in the process of actually in writing addressing some of those issues to House Finance Committee with respect to some questions that came up during our presentation on Senate Bill 23. And so that is something that we are looking at. And this is where it's a real, you know, with this development of the Interior Energy Plan and then also our rural energy program and our energy infrastructure, this is something that we are evaluating. And Nick Shimoniak, Gene Cherio, and members of our rural energy team are looking at that to really develop what is the model that needs to be done, what are the costs to provide infrastructure, and then how can we fund it. And that's another thing that, you know, this past year with the development of the SETS funding program that ADA is managing, I think, you know, the legislature has really kind of made another somewhat pretty specific, rather bold policy statement, too, that although renewable energy grant fund has been important and there's continued support and effort to fund that with the 10-year extension of that program, there's also recognition that we need to really develop, you know, loan programs and make sure that, that entities are looking at cost share for projects. And it's not, and the legislature has been very, very good at providing, you know, loan funds either through the Power Project Fund and then now through the SETS program. But it's also, you know, I think looking at, you know, the combination. And then there was 2 years ago, there was specific conditional language on several energy projects that stated that here's funding for Project X. The state funds in total should not be more than 50% of the total project cost. And those are projects that are managed by the Alaska Energy Authority, and we do monitor to make sure that the total funding provided for that for the state, that we adhere to that conditional language. And there, again, were several projects that developed that way. The one thing I wanted to mention before we move off of this slide with the Renewable Energy Fund was we do have a Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee. We're actually meeting in Juneau on Thursday at 11:30 down at Centennial Hall. And so our advisory committee has four legislators that are on that advisory committee, and we're going to be discussing some of the issues coming up before we send out a next request for applications on what adjustments the advisory committee would recommend to AEA to do, other things that AEA staff and management have seen of wanting some feedback from the advisory committee before we send out another proposal for applications. In addition, I'm sure there will be some conversation with respect to other potential changes that would maybe include statutory changes to the program. So those are usually very very lively discussions about energy policy and about renewable energy policy in particular. So again, that's 11:30 on Thursday.
At where?
Centennial Hall.
And is that open to the public then to sit in? I guess
yes.
Not to be involved, but to watch the proceedings?
We actually allow a public comment period, too. It's established as part of the open meeting. So that is available. And the legislators on the committee are Representative Edgman, Representative Millett, and Senators Fairclough and Senator Hoffman. And last year when they extended the program, they added two additional legislators. So we have two representatives and two senators.
All right, and we have a couple more questions before we move off this.
I'll follow up on the vetting process.
Representative Nagy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Sorry about interrupting. On the vetting process on new emerging technology, how long do you vet the process before you satisfied that it's going to fit within the area that you're working in?
Through the Chair, Representative Nagyak, our process is pretty extensive. As I mentioned, there was a two-phase process that we went through, and then every time that we made a decision with respect to whether a project was funded or not, we also had appeal processes. So applicants could appeal our decision on whether to fund or not to fund. And so we did have to work through a few appeals through both of those both of those processes. And so, you know, we have our statutory construct, we had our regulations that were in place for the project, and then we also went through a very extensive, iterative process and the ability for applicants to appeal to AEA if they disagreed with our decisions.
No, I'm far off. I think what I'm trying to say, I think it's different. There's new emerging technology all the time coming in, and whether they work within, you know, the areas that we live in, whether they will they will work to the benefit of the communities that are looking at emerging technology to reduce costs and such. I just want to know how long do you go through the vetting, or I guess it's the wrong word, is to test the system to make sure that it's going to be working within the areas, because in some areas there might be too much wind for the wind technology, and there's maybe geothermal stuff like that. How long does it take to make sure that, you know, that you put in a system that's going to last instead of maybe breakdown or whatever?
Through the chair, Representative Nagy, depending on the types of projects, I think if you're talking about the actual structure of the project and not necessarily the emerging energy technology projects, but for example, I think the hydro projects are, they typically have a 50-year life. So when a project goes in, and it's one of the values of a hydro project, is you have, long-term stable cost of power, and that's why most of the hydro projects, and especially in Southeast Alaska, you're seeing projects that have been in existence for 100 years. Wind projects are a little bit less of a life. They're about, 20 years is anticipated, 20 to 30 years for wind projects and some other resources.
And, Mr. Chairman, I think perhaps the representative is asking, showing that it's really got an application in the state of Alaska. And that's one of the things that a grant application has to show, that the new technology actually will have a useful application in the state of Alaska. Is it within
5 years?
Within 5 years.
Okay.
So we're not funding just science for the sake of science. They have to actually make the case that this technology can be deployed in Alaska and be put to good use within 5 years.
And the strategic deployment is something that I'll hold off on, because you might be coming up to that, so I'll hold off on that question. Any other questions on this slide before we move?
Mr. Chairman, if I could just reinforce one point that Ms. Fischer just made about loans. If you go back to House Bill 306, one of the points that was made in the legislative intent when that legislation was passed was that the Power Project Fund will serve as the main source of state assistance for energy projects. So that was a loan program, was supposed to be, the legislature said, we want this to be one of the main source for energy assistance in the state of Alaska. Following on that, then, the legislature passed the SETS program, again, a loan program to underpin state investment in energy infrastructure. And as she indicated, there was one of the budgets, capital budgets, that said, okay, here are dollars for individual energy programs. We don't want the state's participation to be more than 50%. So we, the authority, take all of those legislative actions and look at what policy can we derive from that. And it appears the legislature is not just putting forth an energy, infrastructure assistance program that will work when the state is flush with dollars that can work with just grant dollars. There's also actually putting together a framework that will work on behalf of the citizens of the state when money gets a little tighter, too, that we will continue to participate, but you shouldn't expect over the long haul for the state to, 100% fund these. It's going to have to be a partnership,
right,
with the state and the communities on development of infrastructure.
Excellent clarification. Thank you. Anything else? All right. Continue.
Mr. Chairman, it's nice that our friends at AHFC and our partners on energy efficiency are also in the room here. The state did, through House Bill 306, that Mr. Terrio had mentioned, referenced also an energy efficiency goal. We oftentimes talk about our 50% renewable by 2025, but just as important is our efficiency goal of 15% by 2020. So we have been working in partnership with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation through their residential program and then their public building energy efficiency loan program, again another loan program, with respect to making sure that there are tools and resources available in order to help the state achieve this goal. Our focus, AEA's focus, has been on the commercial buildings and then also our rural public buildings, industrial facilities, and supply side efficiency of power systems. We do work with other multi-stakeholder and energy efficiency groups through the Energy Efficiency Partnership. And so we do provide this coordination of the state agencies. And also on this slide, you can see some of the results of diesel equivalent savings through energy efficiency and conservation efforts throughout the state.
Thank you. Representative Hughes.
The 15% efficiency goal, is that 15% less power use, 15% less money spent, 15% of the Alaska address? What is the 15%?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, it's 15% reduction in usage.
And one of the questions there, and we could go back to the emerging, the renewable energy goal also, and that is 50% renewable electricity by 2025. Improved efficiency on this slide, 15% by 2020. How are you going about looking at this so that this goes back to the question I was going to ask, and it may be good now to be thinking about it as you are discussing. But how do you make sure that this is an efficiency that is spread across the entire state and not as a result of one population center that might have the majority of the population achieving this goal, so that you actually get the benefits of the goal or goals spread throughout all the communities as much as possible?
Mr. Chairman, I think one of the ways that I think we've done that, and I think the slide that shows the construction projects that we've had this past year shows that, you know, we have different targeted programs. The Village End Use Efficiency Program is really for targeting small rural communities for their energy efficiency goal. Some of the industrial facilities have been more in some more population centers or industrial. I think it's typically been through the fish processing program. But really, I think what we try to do with our program, and I believe AHFC, if the question is related to them with their statewide distribution, I think they go through a process with their programs to make sure that there is accessibility to the various regions of the state for the assistance that's available. So, you know, as state corporations, you know, we're very sensitive to make sure that the funding that's made available is distributed and made available to entities throughout the state. So it's not just looking for, you know, the one efficiency in one particular population hub, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and you're primarily, again, looking at the loan side, as Gene was saying. We had a presentation last week RuralCap, thank you, with the EnergyWise program, and they were looking at having funds so that they can administer grants, which mm-hmm. often become the only source of employment, you know, for some of these communities, but that's to help with the efficiency goal. How do you interact with the RuralCap or maybe help get them funding? How can you bring all of these things in if your goal is to improve efficiency by 15%, their goal is to improve the efficiencies, you know, at the most immediate level, the residential home? How do you guys interact and how do you work together for for that, even though your funding mechanisms are a little bit different?
Mr. Chairman, through the Energy Efficiency Partnership, we have a lot of entities that are involved in the efforts of energy efficiency, including, you know, the EnergyWise and the RuralCap program. I'm somewhat handicapped that my Deputy Director of Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency isn't with us today, who could talk a bit more thoroughly with respect to the variety of partnerships that we have. Now, through the ERA and stimulus funds, we've actually had some development of some pass-through grants have gone through two entities, including REAP. Chris Rose has been the recipient of a grant through, I think we went from Biggest State to Biggest Saver program that AEA was a successful applicant to be able to apply federal funds for these types of programs. I think, you know, with the partnership and the coordination, I think, you know, you hit upon something when you mentioned EnergyWise. There's a lot of very creative organizations that are really working very diligently to help put forward and help us meet the energy efficiency goal by 15%. And so, you know, there are a variety of entities that are available. There are a variety of grant programs that are available depending on who an applicant or a grantee is. And one of the efforts of the partnership is to really kind of help be a clearinghouse and have a regular quarterly meeting to discuss the variety of programs and funding sources that are available. So, again, it's one of those areas, you know, our coordination effort, even before Mr. Terrio came on to our team, that was something that we coordinated very, very closely with AHFC on the effort of energy efficiency, and where we're seeing a lot more coordination and AEA involved in a coordinating effort for other projects. Energy efficiency has been one area that with us and AHFC, we've been doing this for many, many years.
Great. Thank you.
So this actually, this rural energy infrastructure gets back to a question that Representative Nagyak actually asked a little bit earlier, too, on an assessment of a community. And we are showing the example of St. George here, and this is a great example of a community that applied for a rural or a renewable energy fund grant for a wind system. And it was an earlier grant. It was partially funded by Denali Commission funds and State of Alaska Renewable Energy Fund grant. As we went to the community and assessed the powerhouse, we did realize that the powerhouse was in need of some significant upgrades before wind could be adequately integrated into that system. So what we did is work with the community to look at their energy infrastructure and are working right now to develop and build a new powerhouse before wind is actually integrated in the system. It's actually a very good example of, in some respects, an applicant who, quite frankly, was very upset and disappointed with us as we looked at the renewable grant and realized that we couldn't really allow that project to go forward until we addressed this other issue, where they were disappointed at that point. And let their feelings known to us that they were disappointed with that. We were able to really successfully work with them through our technical assistance and community assistant process and work with them to really meet and have them understand we're here to, you know, not have a renewable system go into a powerhouse that would inevitably not produce the power that they're looking for, and then also have other problems associated with the powerhouse. So, you know, we work very closely with them to develop this. We're working with them on making sure that they can develop their internal capacity to make sure that they are adequately trained and equipped to operate and maintain the powerhouse, work on integrating the wind system into the project, and then also looking at the economic development opportunities, because that really is the driver with the community of St. George, and we see this a lot with other communities, is really about the economic development aspects that they have available to them, and they really see that a very reliable, efficient, and lower-cost energy system will help them develop their community.
And, Mr. Chairman, I think this is one of the areas, just to point back and touch on policy. When the legislature set up the Renewable Energy Fund, the cost of power had gone up, clearly the legislature wanted to do something to assist Alaskans. But I think individual legislators who members of the legislature at that time said, thought it's fairly difficult for any one of you to evaluate a community in my district, thinks they have a renewable energy, or they've got some technology they want to bring in. It might be difficult for the individual legislator or their staff to evaluate what is the technical potential in the community, where is their system right now, can it integrate that? And so basically the Renewable Energy Fund was set up so that AEA, the authority, could work with the communities to make sure, as Sarah just indicated, that we make sure the system can integrate the power before that renewable power is developed. I think it was a very smart policy call made at the time, because again, legislators want to help their communities, but individual legislators might not be able to assess the technical capabilities of the community and the situation of their existing power system. You know, is it up to snuff? Does it need to be bolstered before you develop that? We're able to work with the communities, and we've got the personnel in-house that do have those technical capabilities of performing that evaluation.
As your next slide, I'll hold off. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, our other effort, and we've discussed this in other hearings in front of House Energy, we have been looking at supporting the regional solutions and looking at regional energy planning. And I think the recognition on the regional energy planning and moving from the AEA-produced energy pathway that Mr. Hageson, predecessor had developed was really looking at, you know, regional solutions. And there is no, you know, one silver bullet magic answer for all of Alaska. We're a very, very large state, diverse resources, spread out populations. So, you know, we really wanted to take this towards a regional energy planning effort. And so this is something that we've been working very closely with regional leaders to help develop plans. And again, you know, these plans are really to help vet and help develop what projects are our priority projects for regions. And AEA plays a technical role to help help vet those projects. And then also we would be in a position to work on helping communities and regions developing financing options for particular projects. We've done some significantly larger projects with the Railroad Integrated Resource Plan and the Southeast Integrated Resources Plan. So our work through the other regions is a little bit different, where again there is a regional leader that we're looking for and that we're working with, but also providing a significant amount of technical assistance for them to develop successful plans. And here are the current regional plan contracts that we do have. That we're working in a variety of areas in the state. We do have fiscal year 14 capital requests. Not to plug our capital budget, but I will, Mr. Chairman. We do have a funding request in our capital budget to continue with the regional planning efforts to make sure that we can move forward on having some cohesive regional plans and project priorities throughout the state of Alaska.
While you're on that previous slide, please. Goes into several of the questions. This gets a lot of the areas of the state. So part of my question is, and this is just articulated so that it's clear, and remember, we're not the experts. We just have a lot of questions. We're all freshmen here and eager to help our constituencies and the state as a whole. So when you're looking at the regional plans, going back even a couple slides before, but that's okay, the topic of it, some of these folks evidently have come to you, and others haven't, obviously. So do you go to them as well? I mean, who initiates the contact? That's layer one. Layer two is, let's stick to layer one and amplify that a little bit. ARCTEC, for example. A regional plan might say the consolidation of the rail belt utilities might be a wise and efficient use of of resources and possibly lower the cost. Now, there's a lot of resistance to that. Understandably, certain utilities carry different debt loads than others, and so that might shift the balance of payments to people that didn't have a vote on the cost or the expenditure, let's say. But needless to say, in that, what I'm trying to get to, and I'm sorry, it's like it's a Monday morning, isn't it? Words are not coming easy, but I hope the concept does, that when there's an issue that you see that might help a region come and have efficiencies, utilize better energy infrastructure or whatnot, how do you go about it? And I guess it's a different question if they come to you or if you go to them. And how do you get them agreeing that this is the way to go forward? An easier way to ask is, let's just take West Coast Alaska, Nome, Kotzebue or something, as a hub. And you see the need to integrate energy resources radiating from a hub community to accessible rural areas. How do you get this going? How do you get the plan going? Am I making sense? I'm not sure I'm communicating the question.
Mr. Chairman, I think whether they come to us or we go to them, our interest is that the discussion takes place at the regional level. And so I was pleased to find out that while there might be some geographic areas that are fairly sophisticated, have a well-coordinated effort out of their hub community, maybe a small number of villages, they're ahead of the game. And there might be another area that doesn't have as much of a hub and more diverse and smaller communities. We realized, or AEA realized, that we still need to have that collaboration at the local level. It's not going to be probably ultimately successful if the state just drops in and says, we're the state, we're here to tell you what you need. Ultimately, you don't get the community buy-in to ultimately be successful. So what AEA has done then is go out to those areas and say, we need to make sure this coordination takes place at the local level, and actually has started the discussion and determined who can be a contractor out there to make sure the coordination goes on. But it's a realization from the state administration that, you know, we need to work with the local communities. As Sarah indicated, springboard off of the work that her predecessor did in identifying potential sources of energy to be developed at the local area, and now determine how, if they can be developed, and then how that energy can be shared in a geographic area or a sub-region of that area. And so I think when you look at the map, I think we've pretty much got all of the state covered, that this discussion is going on. Some areas are further ahead than others, just because, again, maybe they had a real dynamic group, or maybe their situation just lent itself to that. I visited, in response to Representative Nagiak's question earlier about do we get out there, I actually participated in one of the regional planning group meetings in the Kotzebue area, and was pretty pleased to see how advanced they are. I mean, they've got a good organization there, but they're also blessed with the fact that they've got a limited number of villages that they're incorporating, so it's made it a little bit easier. But they're probably an example of one of the regions that is sort of ahead of the game, and we want to make sure that level of discussion and coordination takes place in the other regions as well. And if we have to actually go out and look for the contractor to be that core coordinator, that's what AE has done.
Yeah, thanks. And you hit on what I was trying to get at. I really, it's the fact that the plan has, or the encyclopedia that Hagenson put together, a great book, but it has a lot of community by community, and not necessarily how do you get efficiencies by combining community resources, and how do you help to make sure that a project And it goes on to your question. It may be effective for this community, but it sure would have been more effective if you had a whole region on it. So, you know, you don't spend good money and then find that there was a better solution if we had just looked a little bit broader than the community.
Right. And just to maybe flesh that out, one of the things that that Sarah was instrumental in doing, I think, is developing a team at AEA, just a small core of folks that can really run some numbers, crunch some numbers on an idea. If there's an energy source, but it, you know, happens to be located, you know, where God put it, and it's more power than the community right next door needs, will it be economic to develop that energy source and wheel that power to communities around that area? Maybe it's an entire region, maybe it's just a subunit of a region. We've got a team within AEA that can sort of vet those numbers, do some initial number crunching to get a look to see, do we think it's going to be economic to do that? We're doing that. We've run some of those numbers on some proposed projects, and we're prepared to work with regions to run those numbers, you know, in other areas to see is it economic to develop that resource, and then is it going to be economic to get that power to the consumer?
Thank you. Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you. And I really appreciate the work that you all are doing. It's mm-hmm. very, very important. And I did miss the first couple of slides, but there was something that really caught my attention a slide or two ago, and it was No One Energy Plan for Alaska. And I was going to wait until the end, but I see that there are a number of slides, and while we're talking about these regional plans, it really got me thinking, and I don't know how easy it would for you to go back to the slide number 2 on the screen, but and I did miss this slide, but it really I thought it was strange that energy planning and policy wasn't a main bullet and the other 3 sub-bullets under that. And it makes me wonder, no, wrong slide, it's this right after the title slide, back. Yes.
Oh, okay.
So the energy planning and policy seems like it should be the main bullet there, and the other be sub-bullets. And I know we could just be talking semantics, but it seems like we ought to be working towards something on a statewide basis. So I'm glad to see that there's regional, and it's very, very important. And but I'm concerned, and maybe there is a statewide, some more of a statewide plan than, you know, what I'm aware of. So I want to give you an opportunity to talk about that, or is there talk about development of such a thing? And I know we have the 50% renewable goal. We have the 15% mm-hmm. efficiency goal. And those are good things to work toward, and it's, you know, knowing what the end in mind is good. But with those, have we developed an overall plan that carries out beyond? We have the 2020 for the 15%, 2025 for the 50%. But are we looking out beyond that? Are we looking out 30, 40, 50 years? And are we thinking about economic development and the power needs that will be required beyond that? You know, I had the concerns about the Susitna Dam. But looking at the state, I'm going up at the 10,000 foot mm-hmm. level here. But I was excited, Gene, when you came on board, because I felt like it was something very important. We're going to be stifled. We're going to be stifled in the state till we have affordable, I'd like to even say cheap energy, and until we have the infrastructure in place across the state. And we're going to continue to struggle. And I believe there's so much potential for Alaska, so much that, you know, I think we have to think big, and that we really need to get on to the planning. So I'd just like to give an opportunity for you to talk about whether you're doing some of that 30, 40, 50-year kind of planning and bringing these regional plans towards a statewide goal, and the communication about what's needed across the state, from particularly I'm thinking Western Alaska, Interior Alaska, and Southeast Alaska, and bringing it all together. And
I guess Some of the bigger issues, and through the chair, Representative Hughes, that you touched on, and I think a couple of the issues, we have a couple slides that we haven't gotten to yet that talk specifically about some of the larger projects that AEA has been involved in, and some of the larger projects the state of Alaska is really looking at. I guess with respect to this slide, I think our mission of reducing the cost of energy for Alaskans, these are kind of our four primary areas that we are involved in. And I guess as far as whether there's a hierarchy for them or not, in some respects, I mean, these are our four areas that we are involved in. In some respects, what's kind of interesting, investing in Alaska's energy future, the Renewable Energy Fund program passed before the energy planning and policy passed. In some respects, and it wasn't on purpose, but it's kind of some of the things that end up happening as programs are developed and as the legislature looks at legislation that's before them from the administration or other legislators. Sometimes it's kind of how you. It's not always just a nice linear fashion. We've never been in a situation that we've been able to develop things really in a nice linear. We've never have a blank slate. We always have something that we're starting with. In some respects, for Alaska Energy Authority, the Renewable Energy Fund came before the planning and policy portion of it. And I think in some respects, the development of the Renewable Energy Fund made a lot of people think we really need to put some sidebars around this, and we really need to kind of really formulate what the planning and policy should look like around a very significant funding source and a program that the legislature had then codified. So I guess in some respects, we are kind of like working on solidifying that. And I think there's been recognition, especially with the Alaska Energy Authority taking on this leadership role for policy development in a statewide effort, and with Gene's addition to our management team, I think we're pulling all those pieces together. And a lot of times it's focused along bigger projects. It's focused along bringing gas to more Alaskans. It's focused on having a long-term project. And when you talk about 30- and 50-year projects, it's actually a nice segue into talking about a project that you've heard from us before on, why is Susitna-Wautauna Hydro, and it's really about a long-term diversification of our energy portfolio.
Mr. Chair, before you go into that, I guess you don't have to turn back to that earlier slide, but I know the timing of how things came down the pike does affect. But as leadership of AEA and looking at it, I think that, I would encourage you to make sure you get those in the right order. And I'm not saying that you're not, but I would really like to see at the top the word energy plan, mm-hmm. and then that the policy that is helping us realize that plan, and perhaps then you would come back to this committee, if I might say, and say, we need this policy because this is an important piece of the plan, and we can't quite do what we need to do. And I look on two slides after that earlier slide, this particular one that shows all the programs, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, we better have a plan. This is complicated stuff. We've got a lot of program. We've got millions of $1.6 billion. Do we know where we're going? Do we know, what our goal that we have in the end is? Because a lot of things are happening, a lot of money is being spent, and a lot of good things, and we can get down in the weeds, but I think that it's really important that we have an overall plan. And with that plan, I think that we need to be bringing in people, visionaries that are in the various industries that know how to get things done, and make sure that as they look out at the potential for Alaska and the power needs that they might have, that that's incorporated in the plan. And I'm just concerned that maybe we don't have that at this point. Do we have that at this point? Are you working with industry leaders to develop something like this? Is this something that you would be interested in? Could this committee help you bring something so that top bullet is energy plan for the state of Alaska?
Mr. Chairman, I think that second slide as Sarah had indicated earlier, if you look in the statutes, you know, it says AEA under the state law. It sets that top bullet up as our goal, what we're to be achieving. And then the different programs that the legislature have passed are what where the other bullets underneath that come. But the way the statute is written, you know, reducing cost of energy is what we're to be achieving. I certainly understand then the reference to the later slide where it shows all the programs. And one of the things that I do is interact with the different program managers to say, okay, in implementing these programs, which have been passed by the legislature, funded by the legislature, are we achieving success there? Sometimes we have to first have a discussion on how we will even measure whether we're achieving, what metrics will we use to determine whether we're achieving the goal that the legislature passed. And as Sarah indicated, I think because energy prices did go up and the legislature was responding to the call for action from the constituency, the Renewable Energy Fund was passed, and then I think she's absolutely right. And policymakers thought, boy, we've put a lot of money out there now. We need to make sure, you know, what are the policy constraints? And that led to an interim long discussion with citizens in the state of Alaska from all over the state in hammering out the language that was passed as House Bill 306. I think as they went through that discussion that summer, they determined that the state of Alaska is so large, so geographically diverse, that the plan for energy that might work for Southeast doesn't work out in Southwest, and maybe is not a very good fit for even the rail belt. And so what they did is they sort of dropped back and said, well, let's establish goals then, and then we'll leave it up to the state administration then to make sure they utilize the tools that the legislature puts on the table to implement a plan that will work in those subregions. But I think it was a recognition that, you know, one plan that fits all the different regions probably wasn't going to work. That there needed to be enough flexibility in the programs so that they could be tailored for the different regions and subregions of the state of Alaska. And so now, again, one of the things that I continually do is, you know, actually spend some time thinking about, you know, what is the policy, what's the goal, what's the plan, are we actually implementing, utilizing the tools that the legislature has put on the table to move forward, move in that direction. But I'm not sure if it was the representative's suggestion that we still need to be looking for the one plan that will be workable in all of the state, because the availability of resources and the availability to distribute those resources in the different sub-regions of the state make that problem near to impossible.
Mr. Chair, I know there are many slides, and so I'll try to make this be the last one. So you mentioned that there was work during the interim, and I appreciate the fact that it's regionally very different, because I've lived in all the regions except for the North Slope. So I understand that, and so I didn't mean it's a one-size-fits-all kind of thing for the state. But when you mentioned that there was work over the interim, was that were those legislators that worked on that to develop the bill you mentioned? Were industry leaders brought in as part of that, and was there looking out at the future at all with that? And do you see that might be beneficial to refine what they started, to have a discussion and some more development of a plan statewide, understanding there's regions, bringing industry leaders that would look out into future decades?
I don't remember exactly the group of people that engaged in that discussion through the interim, but it was a lengthy list of participants. We certainly can go back and get that information and provide it. I need to refresh my own memory. But it was a series of meetings throughout the summer. It was legislators and regional leaders, and I just can't remember off the top of my head what industry leaders were involved. But it was a robust discussion throughout the entire summer.
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, I know utility leaders were participating in those meetings. I believe the Alaska Power Association was participated in those in various utilities. I believe AVEC participated, one of the larger rural utility that serves over 50 communities, participated in several of those meetings. So I know there was a diverse group of folks that participated, and I know Steve Hagenson from AEA was participating in a lot of those discussions too. So, and one thing I just, Gene reminded me of something that happened with Senate Bill 220 was a real interesting piece of legislation that passed the same time House Bill 306 passed, which was the policy. Senate Bill 220 was actually a conglomeration of a variety of bills that came into one legislation. So there was an energy efficiency bill. The Emerging Energy Technology Fund was a separate piece of legislation. There was, I think, at one point some adjustments to the Renewable Energy Fund that were proposed. And so what the legislature had chosen to do at that time through the House Energy Committee then and the Senate Energy Committee was to really consolidate the variety of sponsorships of those programs, and I think it was kind of one of the initial recognitions is there's a lot of ideas out there. We should really try and coalesce this into one packet of energy legislation. So the House led the effort on the policy development, and the Senate had led the effort on the development of the programs that went along with that. So it was actually a very unique process, and working on the administration side and working on the with the Alaska Energy Authority, there were several meetings that we had on the administration side to meet with the governor's office, to meet with other agencies, Health and Social Services, Department of Education. We had almost every agency represented to really kind of help develop what's in the bill, what was going on with each of those programs, and kind of having a real coordinated effort for the development of that legislation. So it was a very good team effort, and again, a recognition that there are, you know, a variety of ideas, and I think, you know, it's just not a... It's not a linear fashion like a lot of legislative efforts. There's, you know, a variety of issues that come together and through one process. And so that one was a rather unique one for the years that I've worked in the legislature. It was a very unique way for a bunch of ideas on energy related issues to come together under one piece of legislation. So,
and maybe that might be good for us to review some of that as well. I've made a note that might be something we can pursue in the future, bringing all of that back for our awareness so that anything that we push forward would be educated and informed by past efforts. And sometimes it's hard, as you know, being in the legislature. We were involved or not from afar and not from the internal nuts and bolts. And so we bring our own ideas, our own constituent concerns, and our own confusion, I guess, about all that's there. And so trying to coalesce it and then now realizing, oh, we're in the seat that we better do something and we better leave a legacy that works beyond this. That's part of our stress at the moment. And so it's good to have a review of what happened and why what's in statute is there, and is there a better way to look at it?
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to ask another question because I know they need to move on. But I think that would be very helpful. And then I would ask that the presenters just be thinking. I'm still not convinced that there's that map out there, that plan out there that kind of leads us and has really taken into account the potential for industry in the state. And I'm not convinced that is fully there, and whether we might want to look at that as we look back and see what there is, and if there's something more needed. I just encourage the presenters to think about how we might be able to help as a committee.
Thank you, Representative Hughes, and as the Chair of Economic Development, I know that you're looking very hard at making sure that there is that growth opportunity for the regions using energy as one of the legs necessary. Representative Nagyak.
That's my train of thought. But you know, we have a lot to, lot of work ahead of us. I mean, you know, and I think we're on the right direction. We're focusing on providing cheaper energy to the whole state. But, you know, in the process, we also need to make sure that we have access to the whole state. We're talking about manufacturing or economic opportunities for the whole state. And I think regionalize it. There's a lot of regions. There's several regions in the state that we can connect with access to the resources and also to the regional centers. So it'll be cheaper to provide you know, goods and services and also energy to the rest of the state. And you know, the first day, and I'm still serious about this, I still want a road to my house. I mean, because that's, you know, because access is important. You know, back in the, when Eisenhower was president, he connected the United States. I mean, you know, he embarked on a project to increase transportation and reduce costs to the whole nation. He sure did. And so I see something like that in this day. We need to start talking about getting access to the rest of the state, and that in turn will help us reduce cost in a lot of ways.
And that really goes back to the underlying question at the beginning: how do you interact with agencies? We should have brought in transportation, because energy and transportation corridors can go hand in glove, and you address the issues of land access to try to get the energy corridors just for a pipeline, for example. And that's really what it is, connecting people and their communities with other communities and with opportunity and markets and resources and such. So that's where we're all at, and now we're at one of those projects that might help. And again, when we talk about serving 80% of the state's population, we don't want to forget that we still need to find those micro projects versus the mega projects that will help much of the geographical expanse of the state that may or may not be affected by this. But this brings in Mira's desire to have an HVDC line, and can Susit Nuwatana adapt her thinking? This goes back to Representative Hughes' thought. Are we looking at all of these projects with vision that says, okay, instead of doing it exactly the way it's presented, and you alluded to this before with the technology assistance and such, can we adapt a great idea to a project that has legs and maybe send an HVDC line not from the North Slope, but maybe from a Susitna Hydro, and send it out to Western and rural Alaska or something? But now we're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the reasons we wanted to mention Susitna Watana Hydro, too, is, of course, you mentioned the 80% of the state's population. This is a significant project for a majority of Alaskans. You know, there's a lot of, you know, we've talked about the long-term diversification. The one thing I did want to mention about Susitna Watana, because it does come up, is how is this, is it this or the gas line? Is it, you know, are these projects competing? And we really want to, you know, emphasize again that the gas line is really about providing heat and gas to more Alaskans, and providing a, you know, North Slope gas for that purpose. Susitna Watana is really an effort for electricity diversification for our portfolio. It's not something that gas is always going to be part of the future for electricity generation, but we're really talking about diversifying that portfolio and providing a clean, long-term, reliable energy source. And it also does promote the integration of variable power sources. I guess with respect to the HVDC technology, we are working with the Rail Belt Utilities for development of a robust transmission system. And the transmission system for the rail belt isn't something that's just associated with Susitna-Wetana. In many respects, the need for a much more robust transmission system is needed regardless of whether Susitna-Wetana goes forward. However, with the development of that, in order for us to develop Susitna and then also have a hydro-to-hydro coordination with the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Power, that portfolio of projects that would develop a transmission system does include an HVDC line to help take the unconstrained Bradley from the Kenai area. So HVDC is definitely a technology that we're looking at and how that can be done. We've recently done an analysis of HVDC. Kind of again, as I mentioned at the top of the meeting, we've looked at the analysis of HVDC and how the state's perspective on how AEA would evaluate HVDC and whether it would make sense to move forward or not. And we do see that there are potential applications for HVDC for power for a remote mining operation, for example. That's something that's very very possible for something like that. With respect to having a resource that would become the primary resource for heat and electricity in the railroad, I think there, at least my perspective, I haven't seen a lot of support from utilities with respect to doing that, and nor has there been a real analysis on what type of conversion there would need to be in the entire rail belt region in order for HVDC from the North Slope to serve the entire rail belt region. But we have done some analysis with respect to the existing resource in the load with respect to how HVDC would fit in there. Your mention of roads is very, very important. That's another thing that our sister agency, ADA, is looking at when they talk about developing of the Ambler mining area and their work with private entities with respect to that. They're looking at Ambler Mine and the road potentially to there and the governor's effort on the road to resources. And of course, there's the access to the resource, and then there's also the need for the access to the energy, and I think that gets back to Representative Hughes's questions. And we are in receipt of a letter from the committee with respect to some specific questions on the Susitna-Wetana, and we are working on a response to that in addition to a couple other outstanding questions that the committee had from us. And so we will be responding this week to the committee with respect to Representative Hughes and Representative Higgins' questions back to the committee on the specific size of the Susitna-Wetana project and the potential for expansion and the potential cost of doing that. So,
Representative Hughes, I didn't want to cut off your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I won't go into what that letter requests, but because I represent part of MATSU, and I know that some of those folks, not in my district, but are concerned and they're pushing for the gas line instead of the dam, and you mentioned at the beginning of your remarks on this slide that they're both important and not duplicative. One of the things I remember seeing, and I don't know if it was in your material, and I do apologize, I can't remember specifically, but it was a chart that showed, and I think it was in about 12 years or so, once the dam was up and running, that the unit cost actually would end up being cheaper than the gas, which I thought was really impressive in only 12 years. And where so are you familiar with what I'm talking about? And I think it would be important to put that on the record. Because those that are saying that, scrap the dam, let's just go with the gas line, to understand that how the cost for consumers with the dam is going to be really good.
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, that actually is a graph that we put together. That's our project economist helped develop some of those graphic representations to show the comparison of gas costs and what you actually achieve by the long-term stable cost of power, where you essentially, once you have a hydro project producing power, you essentially inflation-proof that cost of energy. And we've seen that with the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project, where 4.5 cents a kilowatt hour, when it was originally constructed, is the same cost that the utilities pay for that power now, over 20 years later. And so that's the important representation for that. And yes, that crossover point, our annual report that was provided to the legislature on the first day of session has that chart in there to demonstrate that comparison of gas costs that continue to have an inflation factor to that stable cost of renewable and hydro project going forward. So thank you for mentioning that, Representative Hughes.
Mr. Chairman, I think that one point to maybe put a little emphasis on is that highlights the stability that hydro in particular can bring to a power distribution system. Just like your mortgage, you have a 20 or 30 year mortgage, that monthly payment is the same, month after month after month. And as Sarah indicated, the cost of power out of Bradley Lake is the same now that it was 20 years ago. And you mentioned the crossover point. Depending on what the policy call is from the legislature in the future on support, actual support and the financing plan for Susitna, you may be able to change that crossover point. And it sort of begs the question, although before that crossover point, gas might be cheaper, what's the price of gas going to be 20 years from now? What will the price of gas be 50 years from now? How about 100 years from now? But we certainly expect the power generated from dam will be the flat, over that long period of time. Investment in hydro, in particular, is renewable source of power that it's multi-generational. It's a decision that the legislature can make now that will be beneficial 100 years from now, very likely 150 years from now. And so that sort of points out the difference between those potential resources. We don't think, though, in the immediate, that the cost of energy out of Susitna for space heat in particular will be economic. And so gas still is going to play a very important role in providing space heat. And when you look at the consumer's cost of energy on a yearly basis, that space heat is a major component.
Yeah, huge point. Okay, continue.
And Mr. Chairman, where Susitna Watana is not a competitor to the gas line, that those are projects that I believe are both important projects for energy future in Alaska. The Interior Energy Plan is really a predecessor for a gas line. This is an opportunity for the state of Alaska to provide low-cost North Slope natural gas and propane prior to a pipeline being constructed in the state. The financing package of the Interior Energy Plan really does act as a catalyst to bring together the customers and the private entities working with ADA. As the financing leader will take an equity ownership of the liquefaction plant on the slope and work with private partners in order to make the project happen. And it is important to remember that it is a financing package. It's not a grant package. This is really about taking financing opportunities and helping pull together a package that allows the Interior Region, with the assistance of the state of Alaska, to really achieve some very significant savings for home heating and, well, both residential and commercial customers in the Fairbanks area, in addition to also addressing the air quality issues and the PM2.5 concern in the Fairbanks area. So the goals of this plan are really to reduce, provide the lowest cost energy to interior Alaska as soon as possible. A gas line is a bit of a longer project, but this is an opportunity to do something sooner than a pipeline. But of course, the infrastructure that's available and that distribution system that would be developed through this initial plan would also be the distribution system that would then be served by the pipeline. And again, it is really an opportunity to utilize and require private sector mechanisms as much as possible into the project. So ADA is working with the proponents of the plan. They have their technical team working on the development of the project, and then working with the potential partners to help make this project happen. The financing package, most of this is in Senate Bill 23. We had mentioned there's the $150 million bond authorization and $125 million sets capitalization, and then the authorization for the sets fund to be used. And then there is also a $50 million appropriation to ADA in order for ADA to take an equity ownership into the liquefaction plant on the North Slope. So again, it's the North Slope liquefaction plant and the gas distribution system for residential and industrial customers in the area. And we had mentioned before, and I'll make sure that the committee receives a copy of the information that we're going to provide to House Finance with respect to our further development of the propane future for interior Alaska that wouldn't be served by the distribution system, and then also rural Alaska. For the further development and what type of infrastructure and analysis that AEA will be doing with respect to that portion of the project. So this is why this project has become quite important, and what we're really attempting to do here. Our analysis does show that we can receive about a 50% reduction in cost for home heating through this program. And so, really over 3,000 of annual home heating savings is expected for residents that would be served through this process. So it is the chart there shows the monthly fuel oil bills that folks are currently paying, and then what we think the range would be with the development of this system.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you could go back just two slides to gas distribution. Maybe can you elaborate a little more on some of your thoughts, what you envision in terms of the distribution system that would go out to the rural parts? So as we talk about, we build the plant up on the North Slope, and then you truck it down to Fairbanks, and then some of the propane can be run up and down the river or down the road there. But to do that, that would, you either need ISO tanks on the Yukon or trucks. And does the plan include anything in terms of distributing some of the propane out to the rural parts of the state, or is that kind of, are you still in the, we're formulating that phase?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, that's actually the part that we're really formulating. The economic analysis for this project is really driven by that trucking delivery to the Fairbanks area and the storage area for the LNG. So the propane is really a byproduct of the system, and it's not the economic driver of the project. However, we want to capitalize on that development of the propane, and really analyzing and developing what type of market can be there for a propane distribution system. In addition to that, now this gets on a bit of the verge of the emerging energy technology. There are ISO containers, and the LNG, it's not out of the question that LNG could potentially be used in a much smaller containers and be used in more rural areas, but again, that's something that's a bit of an emerging technology. We are starting to look at that, but that's definitely something much further down the line, and so we want to really concentrate on how much further we can take that propane distribution system. Now, this slide in particular talks about the gas distribution system. This is discussing the financing of the gas distribution system although it will be served by the trucking system, gas would be stored, regasified, and then put into this gas distribution system. Eventually, this distribution system that would be built with this financing package, or the start of this financing package, would then be served by the a pipeline. Similar to how South Central is actually served by gas distribution.
And directly to Representative Foster's question, this really looks at, as you said, more of the total cost of probably about $1 billion or over $1 billion of build-out just for the Fairbanks North Pole area. which would have the attendant factor of getting propane out to the bush, but specifically then, and we'll get to Representative Nagyak in a second and any follow-up that Representative Foster might have from this, but specifically the, on that last slide, if you could go back, that does not show any funds necessarily for rural build-out along the river system.
Yeah, and the coast.
And up the coast. That's the part that you're still, as you said, formulating.
Yes.
That's a much different equation.
Yes, it is, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chairman, as you've indicated, the ultimate build-out needed or hoped for in the Fairbanks North Star Borough is far beyond in excess of the financing that is part of this plan. But I think it was a recognition on the administration's part that until you actually get something started, get a plant constructed, and get the product flowing, you know, that ultimate build-out isn't going to happen. So that's going to have to happen over time. As Fairbanks utilizes more LNG and the volume goes up, then the amount of propane that's produced out of the plant goes up also. And so more propane becomes available as the utilization in Fairbanks goes up. And also, just Representative Foster mentioned different rural regions. Certainly, the economics of delivering propane or LNG and the utilization of those products on rural locations that are connected in the highway system is different than delivery on the river system. And of course, the further you go on either of those, the economics get a little bit more challenged. We've actually had some inquiries to AEA from coastal communities that are just wanting to know, okay, what all is going on? What do you think your delivery price might be and out of this plant? And obviously, they're looking at, you know, are the economics there to deliver it to coast and then, you know, barge it around to a coastal location? That's a little bit more challenged. But I think with an AEA, we're looking at what are the economics, the core of the interior, and then you've got down the highway system, and you've got the river system, which freezes up every year. Then you've got coastal deliveries, part of which freezes up every year, part of which is open, and the potential delivery is there for year-round delivery. So it's not one size fits all. The economics of each of those sub-regions is a little bit different.
Right. And this also has available what the legislature passed last year, and that was storage tank assistance or assistance in funding that. So this will actually leverage a much broader project that will have its spider webs radiating away from, as you said, the rail belt specific. But as consumption grows, not only does it create demand for a gas line, but it also creates the propane necessary for the rural communities.
Right. And it was just a recognition, I think, on the administration's part that core demand of Fairbanks is what gets the initial product going.
The anchor tenant, yeah.
It's the anchor tenant.
Yeah. Follow-up, Representative Foster.
Well, the reason I raise it, I just want to... you know, preferably if there are plans up front, I think that would be great. Just because I think down the road, you know, as we, you know, in say 5 years or something, you've got a whole new slew of legislators down here trying to get the additional funding later for that. I think, you know, maybe difficult when, you know, 80 or 90% of the population is taken care of, you know, down the road and in the interior, and then we're trying to fight to get that build out later. I think, you know, at that point, people are going to say, well, you know, we're set, and that urgency isn't going to be there down the road, and so that's why I'm concerned about that. And but I do very much understand that you have to start somewhere. You need the anchor tenant. You can't do anything later until we get this piece into place. And so, but I just throw that out there as just a concern. So.
And through the chair, Representative Foster, I think there is a commitment with the Alaska Energy Authority through two programs, our Rural Energy Infrastructure Program, to make sure that we continue on with making sure that we have maximum access and make sure that we work into our rural energy systems, how natural gas and propane can fit into the equation for future infrastructure projects through that program, and then also through our regional energy planning program. That through our regional energy plans, and we've already talked to our regional energy planners and our contractors that we're working with to make sure that as we develop this interior energy plan, that we do incorporate how natural gas and propane could potentially fit into future development of projects through those regions. So we want that incorporated into those regional energy plans. And then, Mr. Chairman, this is our last slide, and this is in some respects kind of a bit of a homework slide for when Representative, I'm going back, I wanted to call him Representative Terrio.
At least you're not saying Senator Terrio on the slide.
Mr. Chairman, that's because when she worked for me, I was just a representative.
I know, and so that's, I've always ended up having that. But I guess the one thing I wanted to say is actually when you told us that we had the 2 hours to talk about energy policy 2 years ago, I would have never thought as executive director I could talk for 2 hours with energy policy. But I guess 2 years later, I'm able to do that. You add a former legislator to the AEA team, we could talk for another 2 hours, Mr. Chairman, I think, on all the work and the activity that AEA is involved in with the coordination efforts. And again, these are some of the issues that we've been working on and will continue to work on, and looking forward to reporting back to this committee next year on the development, especially on some of the last couple of bullets, and also some of the other issues mentioned by some of the committee members.
Excellent. Any final questions? Go ahead and wrap up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think I'll have Gene talk a bit about some of the work that he's developed on the he's been looking at on state resources, and then also what we're looking at on open access to the intertie.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just to go down a couple of these bullets to give you an idea of the issues that do come to AEA. With regard to developing the state's energy resources, there are a couple issues that come up with regards to access. We were approached by individuals in Interior Alaska that were interested in making sure timber resources, wood fiber, was available as a fuel source. And so that sort of begged the question, do we have the current statutes and regulations in place to make sure that long-term access to volume amounts of timber resource that we know are there on state land are in place? And so actually there's legislation that deals with access to timber resources where we actually had some input in making a stronger statement, a sort of policy statement, that timber resources, right now the statutes are more set up for access to timber to cut dimensional lumber, but timber resource actually can be a fuel source in certain areas in the state of Alaska, and we wanted to make sure that the state statutes allowed the contracts that are needed for people to make the investment in the infrastructure to utilize and produce timber resource for a source of energy. Another issue that came up with regard to access is if you've got a potential renewable energy source, but it's on state land, or to transmit that power to the consumer, you have to cross state land. There's an access issue. Are we going to allow access to the state land to develop the resource? And then if that's so, are we going to allow access to state land to make sure that the power can get to the people? And that came up in a couple issues or areas. The Mavista potential hydro project on Chicamac Lake, there's issues there about whether there will be access granted for the research that's needed in the state park. And in addition, in the Haines area, there is potential of development of the Conley Lake hydro project, but you've got the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve. It sort of begs the question, back when the legislature developed those legislatively designated areas, energy and access to renewable sources of energy weren't high on people's minds. Many of these areas were established back in the 70s or 80s when energy prices were much lower. And so now we have to revisit some of those calls on establishing these legislatively designated areas and make a determination, should those areas preclude the development of renewable sources of power in those geographic areas. And so when it comes to access, sometimes it's access to the actual resource itself. Sometimes it's just access to state land so you can even transmit the resource to the users. We've also got right now an issue here in Southeast where the Southeast SEPA organization has put out a call for power. They're interested in whether in Southeast and down in the Ketchikan area, whether there are sources of power that private sector can develop and bring to the power grid to get the power to the consumers. That may be something that develops a little bit further in the rail belt too, where there are potential sources of renewable power that the private sector can develop. That begs the question then, though, do they have access to the transmission grid to get the power to the consumer? So those are issues that we're working on. Also, as mentioned earlier, the question about, you know, should there be more integration in the rail belt system of ability to wheel power up and down the rail belt, but also do we need to have the duplication of the utilities that currently exist? You know, that we explore those areas. I think you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, that there's a certain amount of pushback. There are different reasons for that, different debt loads within the different the utilities in the rail belt. But, you know, we are exploring with the utilities whether further economies of scale can be developed. And certainly the administration is very interested in, no matter who controls the development, whether it's private sector generating or bringing on sources of generation, whether it's the existing utilities or a collaboration of the utilities, we want to make sure the infrastructure is there to be able to wield the power to the ultimate consumer.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate that, and very excellent presentation today. Helped our understanding immensely. We are now on the 24-hour rule, so if we don't have anything scheduled yet for this committee, but if we do, we'll definitely make sure everyone knows about it, and that if there's some concerns that you'd like to follow through the interim, you let us know. This is one of those areas that we need to continue working on. Co-Chair Millett and I have discussed probably six different things that could happen. So stay tuned and give us your input. Let us know what else you might have that we can explore as well. So otherwise, we don't have anything scheduled at the moment. So thank you very much to AEA and also to Alaska Housing folks who were available but not called on at the moment. Stacy and Bob and Scott, I appreciate that. So at this time, let it the records reflect that we are adjourned at 10 a.m.